got a spring or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. In the Bible, Jonah is said to have been swallowed by a great fish, lived for 3 days and then vomited out, only to have his skin and hair turn white. Scientists have found evidence to support long-standing anecdotes that stress causes hair graying. Researchers found that in mice, the type of nerve involved in the fight-or-flight response causes permanent damage to the pigment-regenerating stem cells in the hair follicles. The findings advance knowledge of how stress impacts the body and are a first step towards blocking its negative effects.
It has long been thought that stress causes graying of hair, with many stories told about famous figures and their gray hair. For example, Marie Antoinette supposedly went gray overnight prior to her execution.
John McCain experienced severe injuries as a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War and lost color in his hair. For a long time, other anecdotes have connected stressful experiences with the phenomenon of hair graying. Now, for the first time, Harvard University scientists have actually discovered exactly how this works.
The stress activates nerves that are part of the fight-or-flight response, which in turn cause permanent damage to pigment-regenerating stem cells in hair follicles.
The study, published in Nature magazine, advances scientists' knowledge of how stress can impact the body. Because stress affects the whole body, researchers first had to narrow down which body system was responsible for connecting stress to hair color. At first, they thought that stress causes an immune attack on pigment-producing cells. But they saw that when mice lacked immune cells, they still showed hair graying. At that point, the researchers looked at cortisol, another hormone, but that did not pan out either.
When they removed the adrenal gland from the mice so that they couldn't produce cortisol-like hormones, their hair is still turned gray under stress.
One possibility after another was eliminated until they looked at the sympathetic nerve system, which, as we said, is responsible for the body's fight-or-flight response. Every hair follicle has a sympathetic nerve branch.
The researchers found that stress causes these nerves to release the chemical norepinephrine, which gets taken up by nearby pigment-regenerating stem cells.
After just a few days of stress, all of the pigment-regenerating stem cells were lost. Once they're gone, you can't regenerate pigment anymore. You could say that the damage is permanent at that point. Acute stress, particularly the fight-or-flight response, has been traditionally viewed to be beneficial for an animal's survival. But in this case, acute stress causes permanent depletion of stem cells. Now the researchers began concentrating more and more on this particular connection.
They began with a whole body response and progressively zoomed into individual organ systems, cell-to-cell interaction, and eventually all the way down to molecular dynamics.
What they found eventually was that neurons can control stem cells and their function and can even explain how they interact at the cellular and molecular level to link stress with hair graying.
The findings can help illuminate the broader effects of stress on various organs and tissues. These understanding will pave the way for new studies that seek to modify or block the damaging effects of stress.
By understanding how stress really affects stem cells that regenerate pigment, the researchers can now start to understand how stress affects other tissues and organs in the body, and not just the hair. We just talked about one particular neurotransmitter, but did you know that there are actually over 50 kinds of neurotransmitters? And several of these are directly responsible and related to mental health problems. Now, these include dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, and gamma-aminobutyric acid.
A shortage or excess of these neurotransmitters can generate psychiatric conditions related to anxiety, depression, ADHD, bipolar disorder, social anxiety, and stress.
Did you know that norepinephrine can also be called noradrenaline? The same for epinephrine, as it also goes by the name of adrenaline. And norepinephrine is a neurotransmitter that is very similar to adrenaline. High levels of norepinephrine can cause hostile behavior. Norepinephrine, along with dopamine and phenylalanine, create feelings of infatuation. Imagine that.
If children undergo excessive amounts of stress, they can acquire a permanent deficiency in serotonin and high levels of norepinephrine, which can lead to long-term aggressive behavior.
The nervous system responds to short-term stress with norepinephrine and epinephrine, which increase the heart rate and the blood pressure. And there are other relations and reactions to these neurotransmitters. They also cause other actions within the body that prepare a person for a stressful situation. All of these chemical actions in the brain are responsible for launching a person into that natural defense mode. Again, fight or flight. Both of these neurotransmitters also function as hormones. They belong to a group called the catecholamines.
As hormones, they influence different parts of your body and stimulate your central nervous system. Having too much or too little of either of them can have noticeable effects on your health.
Even chemically, epinephrine and norepinephrine are very similar. The difference is that epinephrine works on both alpha and beta receptors, while norepinephrine only works on the alpha receptors. So what does all that mean?
First of all, the alpha receptors are only found in the arteries, while beta receptors are in the heart, lungs, and arteries of skeletal muscles. It's this distinction that causes epinephrine and norepinephrine to have slightly different functions.
Epinephrine can cause increased blood sugar levels, increased heart rate, increased contractility of the heart muscles, and relaxation of smooth muscles in the airways in order to improve breathing. As you can probably guess from all that, these effects are designed to provide your body with extra energy.
When you are very stressed or afraid, your body releases a flood of epinephrine. This is known as the fight or flight response, or adrenaline rush.
Norepinephrine, again, also called noradrenaline, has effects similar to those of epinephrine, such as increased blood sugar levels, increased heart rate, and increased contractility. And norepinephrine can also cause your blood vessels to narrow, which increases blood pressure.
Taking all of this into account, epinephrine can be used as a medication to be used in the treatment of anaphylaxis. This is a severe allergic reaction that can affect a person's breathing.
An injection of epinephrine can help to open up your airway so you can breathe. So it's often used in asthma attacks. Now, apart from that, it's also used in the treatment of cardiac arrest, as it may actually restart your heart if your heart has stopped pumping. Often it's used in infections. If you have a severe infection and aren't producing enough catecholamines, you may need to be given epinephrine through an intravenous line. And finally, epinephrine can be used in anesthesia. It can be added to local anesthetics to make them last longer. Now we get to the uses of norepinephrine.
It is often used to treat septic shock, which is a severe infection that can lead to organ failure. Septic shock infections can lead to dangerously low blood pressure.
Since norepinephrine constricts blood vessels, it can be given through an IV to increase blood pressure. Some people with ADHD or depression take medications that stimulate or increase the release of norepinephrine, and these include Strattera, Cymbalta, and Effexor. So to sum up the main difference, Carmen, can you tell us what this is?
I sure can. Epinephrine is used to treat anaphylaxis, cardiac arrest, and severe asthma attacks, while norepinephrine is used to treat dangerously low blood pressure.
So what happens if you have a deficiency of either? Low levels of epinephrine and norepinephrine can actually contribute to a variety of physical and mental conditions, including anxiety, depression, fibromyalgia, hypoglycemia, migraine headaches, restless leg syndrome, and many sleep disorders.
Chronic stress, poor nutrition, and taking certain medications such as Ritalin can make you less sensitive to epinephrine and norepinephrine.
Therefore, these factors can also cause your body to start producing less epinephrine as well as less norepinephrine. Do you ever feel like time is just flying by so fast, with days and activities that seem to last forever as a child going by so quickly now? So you now may be asking yourself, why does time fly by so fast as we get older? Doesn't it seem like the holidays just passed? Yet we're almost 2 months past New Year's. Also, why do the days seem so much shorter than they did when we were younger?
According to a Duke University professor of mechanical engineering, Adrian Bejan, this apparent temporal discrepancy is due to our aging brains obtaining and processing images much slower.
People are often amazed at how much they remember from days that seem to last forever in their youth. It's not that their experiences were much deeper or more meaningful. It's just that they were being processed in rapid fire.
As we grow older, our nerves and neurons also grow. This means signals must travel farther along these pathways. These pathways are also degrading as we age, so the signals are experiencing more resistance.
These factors then can lead to a decreased rate of the acquisition and processing of mental images, resulting in the feeling that time is passing more quickly because we cannot view the same volume of images in the same amount of time as we did when we were younger.
Have you ever noticed that babies move their eyes around more frequently? It is because they are processing images much quicker and so move their eyes more frequently to gain more information.
The human mind senses time changing when the perceived images change. By the way, did you ever watch those old Western movies with an Indian on a horse constantly moving back and forth? I always thought that was just because the horse was kind of jittery or fidgety and the rider could not calm the horse down. Actually, this was the way that the Indian rider could see much farther, since by moving his head and eyes over the horizon, he could see changes and movement much better than if he was just standing still.
They simply seem to last longer in your youth because the young mind receives more images during one day than the same mind in old age.
There is a new Alzheimer's eye test that could assist in the early diagnosis of the disease, and it's based on the density of blood vessels in the retina.
Remember that the retina is the screen at the back of our eyes that perceives light. Right now, our real understanding of Alzheimer's disease is relatively limited.
However, a team from the Duke Eye Center has proposed a test that may actually be able to detect Alzheimer's at an early stage. It has been noted that there are changes that occur in the small blood vessels of the brain in people with Alzheimer's disease. There's now a procedure called optical coherence tomography angiography, or OCTA. The researchers observed the density of blood cells in the retina. The Octa machines use light waves to highlight blood flow in every layer of the retina, giving them the ability to detect even the smallest capillaries, some of which were less than half the width of a human hair. This gives much greater detail than previously used methods of imaging blood vessel changes, such as MRI or cerebral angiograms.
The researchers measured blood vessels that can be seen during a regular eye exam. They are also doing that with relatively new non-invasive technology that takes high-resolution images of very small blood vessels within the retina in just a few minutes.
In a study of more than 200 people, differences were found in the retinas of those with Alzheimer's disease when compared to healthy controls. A difference was also found in those with mild cognitive impairment, a factor that's often presented as a precursor to Alzheimer's.
Of the 200 participants, 133 formed the control group, all showing a dense web of blood vessels in the back of the eye. In comparison, in the 39 patients with Alzheimer's disease, the web was less dense and sparse in places.
The results recently published in the medical magazine Ophthalmology Retina suggest that a loss of blood cells in the retina could be a signal for Alzheimer's disease. So the researchers are now measuring blood vessels that can't be seen during a regular eye exam. They are now using that technique I mentioned just a few minutes ago.
It is a relatively new non-invasive technology that takes high-resolution image of very small blood vessels within the retina in just a few minutes.
It appears that the changes in blood vessel density in the retina that could mirror what's going on in the tiny blood vessels in your brain. Thus, they may be able to detect any changes in cognition. Ultimately, the goal would be to use this technology to detect Alzheimer's early, even before the symptoms of memory loss are evident, and be able to monitor these changes over time in the participants of clinical trials studying this new Alzheimer treatment.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Let's get on to our next subject here on the Hey Doc Show. How about mitochondria? Carmen, can you tell our listeners what these really are?
Of course. Mitochondria are double membrane-bound small organisms that are found in organelles found in most cells that contain nuclei.
You know, there are some cells in our bodies that do not have nuclei, like red blood cells, but on average, most mammal cells have nuclei. Mitochondria generate most of the cell's supply of adenosine triphosphate, commonly known as ATP. Without getting too deeply into it, ATP is used as a source of chemical energy, and that's why the mitochondria are often called the powerhouse of the cell.
These are really small. As a matter of fact, in liver cells, there can be from 1,000 to 2,000 mitochondria.
They are also hard to see even with a microscope, as you have to use special stains to make them visible. They're also involved in other tasks, such as signaling, cellular differentiation, cellular death, as well as maintaining control of the cell cycle and cell growth.
Do you know that mitochondria have been implicated in several human diseases, including some cardiac dysfunction, heart failure, and even autism?
The most prominent roles of mitochondria are to produce the energy of the cell. New research brings us closer to a better understanding of what keeps mitochondria healthy.
We mentioned some conditions related to mitochondria, but here are some more. Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and Huntington's disease may be mitochondrial.
And now for the gist of all of this. Mitochondrial dysfunction may be the root of the aging process in general. Although also disputed, the so-called mitochondrial free radical theory of aging is a popular one, and more than one study has suggested that boosting mitochondria's health can prevent cells from aging. So you might be asking, what exactly keeps mitochondria healthy, or what makes them sick?
The latest research looked at this pathway in mice and examined the ways in which exercise and a high-fat diet affected, as well as how these changes affect mitochondrial health.
Mitochondria stay healthy despite stress. What the research teams found was that despite the genetic modification and the added stress of exercise, the mitochondrial function of the mice's muscles in the studies remained intact. Then they fed the mice a high-fat diet in addition to the exercise regimen to stress the mitochondria even more.
Again, the mice's mitochondria showed signs of intact health and adaptation. Therefore, the mitochondria have alternative ways to stimulate recycling and limit the damage.
When these animals were given a high-fat diet, they got better at burning off those fats. And if they were given just the exercise, they were able to make more mitochondria, which is good from an exercise perspective. Obese mice do not seem to have an obvious pathway dysfunction in their mitochondria, and the muscles just seem to respond and adapt well to new stress, whether that's exercise or a high-fat diet.
This suggests that humans with obesity may potentially benefit from exercise. Similarly, in the future, the scientists hope to use human participants to replicate their findings.
And lastly, did you hear that a new group of antibiotics has been discovered with a unique approach to attacking bacteria? It's a promising clinical candidate in the fight against antimicrobial resistance. The first antibiotic we're talking about is called carbamycin, and the lesser known is complestatin. They have a never-before-seen way to kill bacteria, which is achieved by blocking the function of the bacterial cell wall.
The discovery comes from a family of antibiotics called glycopeptides that are produced by soil bacteria.
The research has also demonstrated in mice, of course, that these new antibiotics can block infections caused by that drug-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is a group of bacteria that can cause many serious infections. Bacteria, unlike most human cells, have a cell wall around the outside of their cells that gives them their shape, and it also is a source of strength to the cell.
Antibiotics like penicillin kill bacteria by preventing building of the wall. But these antibiotics actually work by doing the opposite.
What they do is prevent the wall from being broken down. This is critical for cell division. Remember that in order for a cell to grow, it has to divide and expand. If you completely block the breakdown of the wall, it's like it's trapped in a prison and can't expand or grow. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.